Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 11th chapter, verses 1-19. Sri Maitreya said, "My dear Vidura, when Dhruva Maharaj heard the encouraging words of the great sages, he performed the achman by touching water, and then took up his arrow made by Lord Narayan and fixed it upon his bow." So Dhruva Maharaj, in the heat of battle, has sometimes defeated his enemy and sometimes become overwhelmed by the opposing side. And such is life. Sometimes we're overcome, and sometimes we succeed in the struggle for existence. So at one point it appeared that the shining sun of Dhruva had set in the ocean of the Yakshas, but only to reappear, just as the sun dissipates the fog. Now he has again been put into difficulty by the mystic tricks of the Yakshas, and this time the sages come to his rescue, advising him, "Just chant the holy name of Krishna. He can protect you from all difficulties." How powerful is the holy name, whether in happiness or distress, sickness or health, with Krishna or in separation from Krishna. The holy names can deliver us to shelter at his lotus feet. So now, in the first verse, Dhruva Maharaj has fixed his Narayana Astra to his bow, encouraged by the words of the sages. In the purport, Prabhupada describes what is this astra, or what is our astra, actually. What does Prabhupada say? What is our astra? Yes? Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, just like the sages said. Just chant the holy name, and that's our weapon. Prabhupada says here in the purport, "Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also given us a nice weapon for this age. As stated in the Bhagavatam, Sangopangastra, Sangopangastra. In this age, the Narayana Astra, or weapon to drive away Maya, is the chanting of a Hare Krishna mantra in pursuance of the associates of Lord Chaitanya, such as Advaita, Prabhu, Nityananda, Gadadhar, and Shivas. Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shivas Sripal Bhaktivinoda." So in some other purports in other places, Srila Prabhupada explains different meanings of this verse, Sangopangastra Parshadam. Does anybody have an idea? Here we have the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that is the astra. But there are some other astras that can be, yes. The beauty of Lord Chaitanya, yes. This is stated in Adi 3.52, that Prabhupada says that Lord Chaitanya, by his super excellent beauty, Lord Chaitanya subdues all the people of this age. And he's decorated with ornaments of chandan and sandalwood paste. So by his beauty, he's also defeating everyone in Kali Yuga. Sometimes he used weapons in other descents, but in this age, Prabhupada says, he subdues them with his all-attractive figure as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is also stated by Jiva Goswami, his beauty is his astra to subdue the demons. So just as Krishna is all attractive, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is all attractive. Prabhupada says that when he propagated the Sankirtan movement, he attracted many scholars and acharyas, especially in Bengal and Orissa. So then there's another meaning of astra, Sangopangastra, given by Srila Prabhupada. This is actually in a lecture, but it may be in other places too. His associates, right. So that's another meaning of astra. His associates, Lord Chaitanya's associates, they are his astras. Advaita, Nityananda, Shivas. His principal associates, Sangopangastra. So three meanings of astra, Sangopangastra, three types of astra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, beauty of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya's personal associates. These are the astras. And I'd like to read something here. Here's a realization of Hladini Mataji, who is no longer with us, about how the beauty of Lord Chaitanya and the Holy Name is the Astra. This is from Legacy of Love. So this was in 1989. They formed the Harinam Party in Ghana. This is one state in Africa, Ghana. She said, "This is my life stream materialized, so powerful. We had 10 enthusiastic devotees in a van, just traveling from village to village, not even knowing where we would sleep or what we would eat, and not even caring." And so this was what they were doing, just traveling to villages in Africa. She said, "We'd seize the villagers like a military with the weapons of Sri Gaurachandra, his beauty and his holy name. We put up a table in the middle of a village with the all-attractive, beautiful forms of Sri Nitai Gaurachandra. Then Kirtan, where the whole village gathers around, hundreds of simple people. Then one of the devotees lectures for 30 to 40 minutes in their local language that there is only one God, whether you call him Jehovah, Allah, Krishna, etc., and explains the powers of chanting God's names. Then they introduce the books and homemade incense the devotees make, and there is a second kirtan that so many villagers join in." So then that was her realization of her weapons. The weapons in Africa were the beauty and the holy name, beauty of Lord Chaitanya. So they went traveling with the deities of Nitai Gaurachandra. So this is explained, as Prabhupada explains in this purport, the astra, the weapon to drive away Maya, is chanting of Hare Krishna. Verse 2. As soon as Dhruva Maharaj joined the Narayana Astra arrow to his bow, the illusion created by the Yakshas was immediately vanquished. Just as all material pains and pleasures are vanquished when one becomes fully cognizant of the self. So we're waiting for that day when we will become cognizant of ourselves. In the meantime, we keep on chanting. So Prabhupada says in the purport, Krishna is like the sun, and Maya, or the illusory energy of Krishna, is like darkness. Darkness means absence of light. Similarly, Maya means absence of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness and Maya are always there, side by side. Soon as there is awakening of Krishna consciousness, all the illusory pains and pleasures of material existence are vanquished. Maya metam tarantite. Constant chanting of the Maha Mantra will keep us always aloof from the illusory energy of Maya. So what verses, or what verse? Maya Krishna Surya Sam, Maya Hoy Andakar. Jaha Krishna Taha Nahi, Maya Adhikar. Godhead is light, nescience is darkness. Where there is Godhead, there is no nescience. That is what the logo on the Back to Godhead magazine. Light. Where there is light, there is no darkness. So Srila Prabhupada, in one purport in 7th canto, 7.8.24, explains that when Nrisimhadeva appeared, then the influence of Hiranyakashipu's passion and ignorance was vanquished. So it appeared when he and his Brahman effulgence became prominent, so that it appeared that Hiranyakashipu merged into the effulgence because you couldn't see him when the Lord appeared. So this is an example of how the darkness of the material world is vanquished when the Lord appears. So there is another example, if anybody can remember. This is at the beginning of creation. Does anybody know this example? This is when Lord Brahma was born. He was in darkness. So Srila Prabhupada says, but when he received knowledge, then everything became clear, just as one comes from night to daytime. So this is another example of if you're in the light of Krishna, then you're in the light. And there's a verse in Bhagavatam, one of the Chatushloki, that is also explaining. What is that? Vitirtam yat patiyeta na patiyeta chatmani. Tavidad atmano mayam yatava so yatatamam. What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of real light in the shadows, for in the light there are neither shadows nor reflections. So how to remain in the light? This is the question. How to stay? Because it's always side by side. It's always with us, Maya and Krishna. Either we can go in shadow or we can go in light. So how to keep ourselves always in the light? What is the secret of doing this? You tell me, because I don't know. No, actually. What is it? Yes. Mahatmanastu mamparta daivam prakriti mashita. Yes, we take shelter of the divine energy. And sometimes we forget and we take shelter of Maya during the day. So this is, it's always there. We always have a choice, Maya or Krishna. Take shelter. Any other answers? Yeah. Always pray for protection. Prayer is very important, very powerful, especially in Vrindavan, as Braja Bihar Prabhu said yesterday. Yes. Satatam kirtiyantamam yatantascha dutavata. So the verse after the one that Maharanda Puri quote, 9:13 and 9:14 in Bhagavad Gita. This is how to keep ourselves in light. Prabhupada gives a nice example in a lecture that if you go in your airplane in the morning and you go west, then you keep on going, you'll never see night. You go with the sun. So that's what we have to do. We have to go with the sun of Krishna. Keep going west. And then in one lecture, it's in a purport, Adi Lila 13:5, Srila Prabhupada says that the devotees of the Lord are the only light in this age of Kali. He says, by the illumination of moons brightened by the reflection of the Krishna sun, or by the grace of all devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the entire world will be illuminated despite the darkness of the Kali Yuga. Only devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can dissipate the darkness of Kali Yuga. We therefore wish all the devotees of the Krishna conscious movement may reflect the Supreme Sun and thus dissipate the darkness of the entire world. So this was Prabhupada's desire, that we all become like moons and we take the reflection of the Krishna Sun. That was the analogy that Prabhupada gave. The Krishna Sun is there and we should reflect the Krishna Sun. And then we can dissipate the darkness of Kali Yuga. So we should also become the weapons of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We should become a weapon for him to dissipate the darkness of Kali. So Prabhupada had that desire. Verse 3. Even as Dhruva Maharaj fixed the weapon made by Narayana Rishi onto his bow, arrows with golden shafts and feathers like the wings of a swan flew out of it. They entered the enemy soldiers with a great hissing sound, just as peacocks enter a forest with tumultuous crowing. Those sharp arrows dismayed the enemy soldiers, who became almost unconscious. But various yakshas on the battlefield, in a rage against Dhruva Maharaj, somehow or other collected their weapons and attacked, just as serpents agitated by Garuda rush towards Garuda with upraised hoods. All the yaksha soldiers prepared to overcome Dhruva Maharaj with their upraised weapons. When Dhruva Maharaj saw the yakshas coming forward, he immediately took his arrows and cut the enemies to pieces, separating their arms, legs, heads, and bellies from their bodies. He delivered the yakshas to the planetary system which is situated above the sun globe and which is attainable only by first-class brahmacharis who have never discharged their saman. So here, a great devotee. What happens when you get killed by a great devotee? Such a nice, you go to Satyaloka. And Arjuna, he did one up on him. He sent everyone to Vaikuntha. And Arjuna killed them. So here Prabhupada says, to be killed by the Lord or by his devotees is auspicious for non-devotees. The yakshas were killed indiscriminately by Dhruva Maharaj, but they attained the planetary system attainable only for brahmacharis who never discharged their semen. As the impersonalist gyanis or demons killed by the Lord attain Brahmaloka or Satyaloka, persons killed by a devotee of the Lord also attain Satyaloka. So quite an amazing experience here, that it looks like he's killing everyone, but actually he's sending everyone very quickly up to Brahmaloka, which is quite amazing, quite amazing. So Arjuna, he also did that. We hear in third canto last year, 3:20. I'll just sing the verse. Etaiva chanye naralokavira yahave krishna makaravindam Nityaipipanto nayanopiraman Partascha puta paramaparasya. Certainly others who were fighters on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified by the onslaught of Arjuna's arrows, and while seeing the lotus-like face of Krishna, so pleasing to the eyes, they achieved the abode of the Lord. So this is the effect of Vaishnava association. Even if you get on the wrong side of the Vaishnava, it's good for you. He will send you either to Satyaloka or back to Godhead, if he shoots you. So this is what is happening here. Dhruva Maharaj is sending all the yakshas up to Brahmaloka, which is something they would never in millions of births have achieved otherwise. They would have come back, and finally perhaps gone to Satyaloka. But here, just by being killed, they're going. Yes, Sankirtan.
The Bhagavad Gita, which is duty, promotes one.
To heavenly planets. Yeah, that's more like Indraloka. It's if they're fighting on religious principles, then they would go to Indraloka. Yeah, they're defending their city. But they wouldn't have gone to Brahmaloka. Yeah, much higher. Because Indraloka, again, you go up, you come back. Go up, you come back. But Brahmaloka, you don't easily come back. You have such a long lifespan up there. And that's where, at the end of Brahma's day, all the rishis from Maharloka go up to, or they go up to Janaloka, actually, don't they? From Maharloka, they take airplanes up to Janaloka. But Satyaloka is very, very high destination. Verse 6. When Swayambhuva Manu saw that his grandson Dhruva Maharaj was killing so many of the yakshas who were not actually offenders, out of his great compassion he approached Dhruva with great sages to give him good instruction. So the rest of this chapter retells the statements of Swayambhuva Manu, and it's very interesting because it's telling some essential points in Krishna consciousness. It's like a summary of philosophy. That what is the motivational force that inspires us or stops us from acting? So this we have to understand. Why should we act or why should we stop acting? He's going to tell him why you should stop doing this killing. So let's go on. It's quite interesting because a lot of these arguments that Manu is going to give to Dhruva are similar to Krishna's arguments to Arjuna to fight in Bhagavad Gita. They're not this body, this, that. But he's going to be the opposite. He's giving him these arguments to tell him not to fight. So it's quite interesting when you hear these different arguments. So first, some of them, not all of the arguments, but here he's saying you're not the body, so therefore don't fight, don't kill. This is quite interesting. Verse 7. Can you turn that flip chart back over? It should go one page back. The list of the arguments are there from verse 7. Yeah, thank you. Ati Roshena. Lord Manu said, "My dear son, please stop. It is not good to become unnecessarily angry. It is a path to hellish life. Now you are going beyond the limit by killing yakshas who are not actually offenders." So, atiroshena, first argument, unnecessary anger. So my question is, and this is discussed in the purport, what is the difference between necessary anger and unnecessary anger? What is necessary anger, first of all? Vanamali? No, Amarvanipur. Okay. So the Kshatriya can use anger as a tool. There is necessary anger when the religious principles are broken, and the Kshatriya must enforce. It is his duty to enforce those principles. Yes. Yes. Okay. Proper anger would be if he just found the person who killed his brother and kill him. Not that he goes and kills hundreds and thousands. Yes.
He killed for maintenance of law and order of state.
Uh-huh. Kshatriya, so this is in paragraph 2. A Kshatriya is allowed to kill only for maintenance of a law and order of the state. He is not allowed to kill or commit violence without reason. So although Kshatriya has the license to kill, it is not without reason. Not just he gets angry and he kills someone. It has to be a good reason. Yes. Six types of aggressors mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. And that's, is that from Manu Samhita? From Manu Samhita, six types of aggressors are allowed to be killed. So here, the aggressor had killed his someone who kills, he killed his brother, so therefore he was allowed to kill. Yes. Yes, that's true. Before they decided to go to war, so much reason is applied. They tried to stop. Last resort, yes. Fighting was the last resort. The battle. Argumentum ad veculum. Yes. When nothing else works, then the stick is the only danda. So this is what happened. He went out and he was killing. Prabhupada says, in this verse, the word antiroshena means with unnecessary anger. When Jiva Maharaj went beyond the limits of necessary anger, his grandfather, Sayanguva Manu, immediately came to protect him from further sinful action. So not only was he protecting the yakshas, he was protecting Dhruva from his anger. So this is very nice. I think someone mentioned it in class yesterday. If a devotee goes off, then somebody comes and corrects him and tries to. So Dhruva had gone off, actually, in his anger. And Manu came to stop him. From this we can understand that killing is not bad, but when killing is done unnecessarily or when an offenseless person is killed, such killing opens the path to hell. Dhruva Maharaj was saved from such sinful action because he was a great devotee. So then we read that, beginning of second paragraph. Again, violence is certainly a path leading to a hellish condition of life, but it is also required for maintenance of law and order of the state. So this is in paragraph 2, second sentence. Here Lord Manu prohibited Dhruva Maharaj from killing the yakshas because only one of them was punishable for killing his brother, Uttama. Not all of the yaksha citizens were punishable. We find in modern warfare, however, that attacks are made upon innocent citizens who are without fault. According to the law of Manu, such warfare is a most sinful activity. So that's all we see now in the modern days, is modern warfare. Although sometimes they say they're not throwing the bombs on the citizens and the hospitals, but actually the other side says, no, they're throwing the bombs on the schools. So actually they are. They're not following the rules. Now before, a few hundred years ago, then there were rules for fighting even in Europe. And before, a few hundred years, just the armies would fight each other. They wouldn't disturb the citizens. But now Kali Yuga has progressed, so then we have all these bombs and throwing them on the cities. So this is going on. Verse 8. My dear son, the killing of the sinless yakshas which you have undertaken is not at all approved by authorities. This is argument 2. And it does not befit our family, which is supposed to know the laws of religion and irreligion. So he's in a very high family, and he should have known better that he shouldn't have done this. My dear son, it has been proved that you are very much affectionate towards your brother and are greatly aggrieved at his being killed by the yakshas. But just consider, for one yaksha's offense, you have killed many others who are innocent. So here's, we were discussing this yesterday, that he might have felt a little guilty because before he desired revenge against his brother, and now he got it. And so he was trying to prove. So Manu said, no, you already proved yourself that you're affectionate to your brother and you don't have any ill feelings still, and you went to fight for him. Yes. Yeah, he was predestined. But even if it... but so, if something is predestined, that doesn't mean that you don't react properly to it happening, right?
Well, in this case, he's getting angry about what happened. So he doesn't agree with the situation.
Yeah, well, this Manu will give these arguments. It's fate. Some say it's fate. Some say it's karma. Some say it's this. I think today we might get, no, it's tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll get into all these different arguments that Manu gives for not fighting. That you can, you know, it's just destiny. It's just karma. Why are you killing unnecessarily? But in anger, you forget all these things. You forget the philosophy, you forget everything, and you just become angry. And that's how it happens. So verse 10, one should not accept the body as the self, and thus, like the animals, kill the bodies of others. This is especially forbidden by saintly persons who follow the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here is the argument, you're not this body, so therefore you should not kill. Don't be like the animals who just kill for no reason, senselessly. So at the end of this purport, Srila Prabhupada says, Juva Maharaj is advised here by Lord Manu that he is a pure servitor of the Lord. Why should he unnecessarily engage like the animals in the bodily concept of life? An animal thinks that the body of another animal is his food. Therefore, in the bodily concept of life, one animal attacks another. A human being, especially one who is a devotee of the Lord, should not act like this. A sadhu, a saintly devotee, is not supposed to kill animals unnecessarily. So this is the next argument. Number 9, innocence. Number 10, saintly persons should not kill others. So verse 11. Sarvuttatma bhavena bhutavasam harimbhavam aradhyapa duraradhyam vishnostat paramam param. It is very difficult to achieve the spiritual abode of Hari in the Vaikuntha planets, but you are so fortunate that you are already destined to go to that abode by worshipping Him as the supreme abode of all living entities. So in the purport, if you read the verse, you don't quite understand, you may not understand what is the argument. Actually, I didn't even put it up there because it was in the purport, more or less. But what is the argument that Prabhupada gives, that Prabhupada explains Manu is giving, which argument, why he shouldn't kill in this case? You're going back to Godhead, and it's very difficult to go there. You're already destined. Prabhupada gives another argument in the purport, actually. Okay, I'll read it to you. This is the end. Dhruva Maharaj as a Kshatriya could have argued with his grandfather Manu when Manu requested him to stop fighting. But even though Dhruva could have argued that as a Kshatriya was his duty to fight with the enemy, he was informed that since every living entity is a residence of the Supreme Lord and can be considered a temple of the Lord, the unnecessary killing of any living entity is not permitted. So here the argument is that he's disturbing the Lord's temple if he's going to kill. I didn't put it up, actually. I didn't put it up. It should be up. But it was actually, it wasn't in the verse. It was indirectly there. So I didn't catch it myself. But it was in the purport there, verse 11. You can add it to your list, that every living entity is a temple of the Lord, so therefore you should not kill. Because Manu did not say it directly, but Srila Prabhupada explained it from that verse. Verse 12. Because you are a pure devotee of the Lord is always thinking of you, and you are also recognized by all His confidential devotees. Your life is meant for exemplary behavior. I am therefore surprised. Why have you undertaken such an abominable task? So the devotee, what's the verse that you should set the example? Yad yadat charati shestas tattare vetaro janaha. Whatever a great man does, the common men follow him. So this is the argument he's giving now, why he should stop fighting. You're not being a good example. You're going back to Godhead and just see how you're behaving. What are people going to say? Huh? Misbehaving, yes. You're supposed to be a pure devotee. You're going back to Godhead. What are people going to think about your behavior? You're acting like an animal. They kill without reason. So middle, of the purport. Prabhupada says, Swayambhuvamana pointed out this fact to Dhruva Maharaj. Not only are you a pure devotee, but you are recognized by all pure devotees of the Lord. You should always act in such an exemplary way that others may learn from you. Under the circumstances, it is surprising that you have killed so many faultless yakshas. So this point applies to us, that we are expected to have, as devotees of ISKCON, to have certain behavior. And when devotees don't behave according properly, then the blame goes to ISKCON. One person for one person's fault, then everyone gets in trouble. So this happened recently. One person went in jail, now the FRO is after everyone. Let's see, where is the rascal ISKCON devotee? Let's find some more. So anyway, this is happening now. So our behavior has to be good, exemplary. Yeah.
So he's already destined.
He's destined to go back to Godhead.
Depending on the time of death.
No, he wasn't depending on the time of death. Okay, so your question is that he was already destined to go back to Godhead, and it didn't matter. The time of death didn't matter so much. So is that true for us too? For some devotees? Probably for some devotees, it's true. What's that? Not for you. Well, we would like to think so. I would like to think that, yes, I'm destined to go back to Godhead. But of course it's true that we're on the path, and we are destined to go back to Godhead. But it may not be. It may be in this life, it may be in another life. But the destiny is there. Now the path is open. Yes. That's true. Yeah, okay. Remember what Prabhupada said. We're completely insignificant compared to Dhruva. So after many, many births, we may go back to Godhead. But Prabhupada said, in this life, we should go. So if you have the determination of Dhruva, or if you have the blessings of a great saint like Narada Muni, Srila Prabhupada, then it's quite anything is possible. Anything is possible. And if you have faith, like Dhruva, Dhruva had so much faith in Narada Muni that, yes, he can accomplish impossible. I can get a kingdom greater than Lord Brahma. So if we have faith in Srila Prabhupada, then we can also achieve the impossible, because it's not us doing it, it's him doing it. He can achieve the impossible. But we have to follow him. If we follow him, then it's possible. Verse 13. So now, in case Dhruva Maharaj forgot, which he did forget, Manu is going to explain to him what is the behavior of a devotee, how you should behave. This is what you should do. Verse 13. You can flip the flip chart. Yeah. So I'll sing it. Titikshaya kulaya maitya chakira chantishya samatena chisarvatma bhagavan samvasirati. The Lord is very satisfied with his devotee when the devotee greets other people with tolerance, mercy, friendship, and equality. So now he's advising Dhruva Maharaj that if you want to please the Lord, then you should behave like this. Then the Lord will be pleased with you. So with whom should we be tolerant? First it says, titikshaya. With whom? These are four different classes, actually. Behavior with four different classes of living entities. So first one is titikshaya. So who should he tolerate? Who should we tolerate?
Envious
persons. Right. And karunaya, with whom should we be merciful? Innocent. With whom should we be friendly? Equals. And with whom should we be chakila jantushu samatvena? With whom should we be equipoised or equal? Equal, samatvena. With whom should we be the same with everyone, not discriminate? That is all living entities. Sarva jantushu, akila jantushu, all living entities. So this is the madhyama devotee. Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, it is the duty of an advanced devotee in the second stage of devotional perfection to act in accordance with this verse. So for those of you who want to become Madhyam devotees, then this is the behavior. There are three stages of devotional life. In the lowest stage, a devotee is simply concerned with the deity in the temple, and he worships the Lord with great devotion, according to rules and regulations. In the second stage, the devotee is cognizant of his relationship with the Lord, his relationship with fellow devotees, his relationship with persons who are innocent, and his relationship with persons who are envious. Sometimes devotees are ill-treated by envious persons. It is advised that an advanced devotee should be tolerant. He should show complete mercy to persons who are ignorant or innocent. A preacher devotee is meant to show mercy to innocent persons whom he can elevate to devotional service. Everyone, by constitutional position, is an eternal servant of God. Therefore, a devotee's business is to awaken everyone's Krishna consciousness. That is his mercy. What verse supports this philosophy? Yes. Sankirtan?
You asked that verse here?
Yeah, anything, either the verse or the purport. What verse? Titikshava Karanika. Suhira Savadehinam. Ajata Shatava Shanta. San Sarabhushanam. So, say a Sarava Sarabhushanam. Three twenty-five, twenty-one. That verse. Very similar. I mean, in some ways. Yes. Ishara Taradineshu. So this is the second class Madhyamadikari. Yes, he sees four different classes of living entities. So this is the Prabhupada is explaining that what should be the behavior of a preacher. Madhyama devotee is preacher. And Prabhupada often gave the example of the devotees who were staying on Juhu land in Bombay, how they were titikshava karanika suhira sarvadehinam. So they were so tolerant. I know one, the lady pujari, they were dragging her off by the hair and throwing her into jail because she was trying to protect the deities from attack. But they were tearing down the temple and they were going after the deities also, and she was trying to protect them. So they took her to jail. And so Prabhupada said, so we could have left this Bombay. What's the use if these people don't want? We have so many temples everywhere. Why should we care if the people in Bombay don't want to hear? But Prabhupada said, no, we have to tolerate and give this message and be merciful, merciful to them. So therefore, Prabhupada, he sent his devotees everywhere to preach. And because they were tolerating, then they become suhrida, a very nice sweetheart, always thinking of the welfare of others. So as Prabhupada behaved and preached, so he expected his devotees, his disciples and grand disciples, to also behave and preach in the same way. So now Manu is instructing Dhruva, this is how you should behave. As a Madhyam, how are you fighting like this? You're not even on the Madhyam level of devotional service. So he's chastising him. Verse 14. Again, to satisfy the Lord, one who actually satisfies the Supreme Personality of Godhead during one's lifetime becomes liberated from the gross and subtle material conditions. Thus, being freed from all material modes of nature, he achieves unlimited spiritual bliss. So even he's promising, you know, if you satisfy the Lord, you'll get liberated, but from both gross and subtle. So now he's encouraging Dhruva on the positive side. If you actually behave like a devotee, then you will get these rewards. You'll get liberation. So in paragraph 2, Prabhupada explains the difference between the other transcendentalists, other persons on spiritual paths, karmis, gyanis, yogis, and the difference between them and the devotees. So what's the difference between these other people, karmis, gyanis, yogis, and devotees? Guru Sevananda.
They try to satisfy themselves, not Krishna.
Yes. One basic difference. All the karmis, the gyanis, yogis, they want to satisfy themselves. And the devotee wants to satisfy Krishna. This is the difference. So Prabhupada said, outside of bhakti yoga, everyone is trying to satisfy himself. No one is trying to satisfy the Lord. Karmis grossly try to satisfy their senses. But even those who are elevated to the platform of knowledge also try to satisfy themselves in a subtle form. Karmis try to satisfy themselves by sense gratification, and Gyanis try to satisfy themselves by subtle activities or mental speculation and thinking themselves to be God. Yogis also try to satisfy themselves by thinking they can achieve different mystic perfections, but only devotees try to satisfy Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotees' process is self-realization is completely different from the processes of Karmis, Gyanis, and Yogis. Everyone else is trying to satisfy himself, whereas the devotee tries only to satisfy the Lord. So this makes, and therefore he enjoys unlimited blissful life. What's another verse? Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atta Eva Shanta Bhukti Siddhi Kami Shakaliya Shanta. So up to this point, Manu has explained to Juva not to act in a selfish way, but on the highest knowledge of pleasing the Lord, and then you'll be free and get eternal happiness. Now in verses 15 to 26, he will speak in a different way. He'll explain more about the Lord, the living entities, their relationship with everything created, more like Sambandha Gyan, more knowledge about the creation. We're going to hear a little summary, a very short summary of creation and time and all these things now in the next verses. So first, verse 15. The creation of the material world begins with the five elements, and thus everything, including the body of a man or a woman, is created of these elements. By the sexual life of man and woman, the number of men and women in this material world is further increased. Now, why is he talking about creation? I mean, all of a sudden, now we're talking about the five elements and the body. Yeah. Okay. He's trying to give a sense to Dhruva that there is a more remote cause than what he's seeing with his eyes. It's not that the Yakshas killed his brother. Some other cause is there. No, we're talking philosophy now. Yes. Yes, it does seem that way. He's in the bodily concept of... He's in the bodily concept of life. Right. Okay, let's go on. Paragraph 1. When Swayambhuva Manu saw that Dhruva Maharaj understood the philosophy of Vaishnavism and yet was still dissatisfied because of his brother's death, he gave him an explanation of how this material body is created by the five elements of material nature. So now he was speaking on a higher level before. What is Vaishnavism? You should behave like this. Now he's going down to the you are not this body level, Prabhupada says here. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also confirmed, Prakrite Kriyamanani, everything is created, maintained, and annihilated by the material modes of nature. In the background, of course, there is the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dakshena. In the 9th chapter, Krishna says, under my superintendence, material nature is acting. Swayambhuva Manu wanted to impress on Dhruva Maharaj that the death of the material body of his brother was not actually the Yaksha's fault. It was an act of the material nature. So this is what was behind this argument. It's not that the Yaksha killed your brother. The Yakshas didn't. It's nature. Nature did it. And when I was having trouble in Bombay and that anesthetic, I also, in my first thing that came in my mind when I became conscious is, who did it? Why did they do this? What is the cause? And this was also going on my mind for weeks after. I was thinking, of course, and I started studying this, and Manu was giving me all the arguments, well, it's material nature is the cause. So Manu was preaching to me as well here, in my confused state. But now he's also preaching to Dhruva. Supreme Personality of Godhead has immense varieties of potencies, and they act in different gross and subtle ways. So how does this apply to us? At the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, one should not be disturbed by the waves of material nature in this process. Dhruva Maharaj was indirectly advised not to be afflicted by the death of his brother because our relationship with the body is completely material. The real self, spirit soul, is never annihilated or killed by anyone. So ultimately it's Krishna, and this will be mentioned later on. So if somebody kills your brother, then here he's saying, if it's material nature, then how can you retaliate against material nature? Can you kill material nature? No. What will you do? What can you do if you're attacked by material nature? Verse 16. Manu continued, "My dear King Dhruva, it is simply by the illusory material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by the interaction of the three modes of material nature, that creation, maintenance, and annihilation take place." So annihilation means they were killed by the material nature. Your brother was killed. "My dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. He is the remote cause of the creation of this material cosmic manifestation. When he gives the impetus, many other causes and effects are produced, and thus the whole universe moves, just as iron moves by the integrated force of a magnet." So now he's saying, well, it's material nature, but behind that is the Lord. So what are you going to do about that? Are you going to go fight with him? Are you going to go fight with material nature? This is actually the cause, but he's not the actual cause. He's the remote cause. Behind it. He's behind everything. So in the purport, Prabhupada gives an analogy of the clay, the wheel, and the potter. So which is the cause of the pot? The clay, the wheel, or the potter? One who makes the pot. Three of them. You vote for all three. Three different causes.
There's five causes of action.
Five causes of action, according to Bhagavad Gita. Five factors of action. Five factors of action. Yes.
There's also a customer.
Yeah, that's an important point. There's a customer for the pot. Who wants to buy the pot? Oh, that's good. So the wheel, the potter, and the clay. So what is the wheel compared to? What is the clay compared to? Yes, clay is the material world, the elements. And what is the wheel compared to? The modes of nature. The wheel that the pot is turning on is the modes of nature. And the potter is the Lord. And who is the customer? We. We're the customers for the pot of material nature.
Similar example in the
13th chapter. Artist. Easel. The painting. The painting, the painter, and the easel. Okay, so these are examples to help us understand what's going on in this material world. What is the news in this world? As was asked by Yudhisthira Maharaj, there's a potter, the wheel, and the modes, and there is the customer, and that is us. Yes. So at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says a verse showing that actually Krishna is the cause. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadirada Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. There are many causes and effects, but the original cause is Sri Krishna. So one time when devotee came to me and she was upset with her temple management. She was very angry, actually. But she felt like, well, she couldn't be angry with the management because they were devotees and she didn't want to do Vaishnava Aparad. So I told her, well, why don't you just be angry with Krishna because he's the one that's behind it. So then she said, okay, I'll try that. So then she wasn't really angry. She said she just prayed to Krishna, Krishna, just do something. And then one morning she prayed like that. And by the end of the day, somebody gave her Radha Krishna deities to take care of. Because she had lost her service of taking care of Gorni Thai in the temple. So then at the end of the day, someone gave her Radha Krishna deities. So when she was angry with Krishna, then Krishna came to her, okay, take care of me now. So she, anyway, it's quite interesting. What happens when you deal directly with Krishna? Yeah. Yes. I think I was going to bring that up with the next verse. I did, yeah. Verse 18. Yes. Yes. Yeah, this will be brought up, and let's read the next verse. This is actually what verse 18. You can flip the flip chart again. Verse 18 states this very thing. In fact, you're following the arguments of Manu. This is what Manu says next. So, okay, you may think it's nature, you may think it's the Lord, but it's not. And here we see in verse 18, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His inconceivable supreme energy, time, causes the interaction of the three modes of material nature, and thus varieties of energy become manifest. It appears that He is acting, but He is not the actor. He is killing, but He is not the killer. Only Krishna can do that. Everybody else who's killing, they're the killer. But unless they're Arjuna. Thus it is understood that only by His inconceivable power is everything happening. So everything points to Krishna as the one now, as the Supreme Lord. He's the one. It's all pointing to Him. But then it's saying here, no, it's not Him. It is Him, but it's not Him. So here we go. What's that philosophy? Chintya Veda Veda Tattva. It is and it's not. Simultaneously one and different from Krishna. So Prabhupada says, end of paragraph 1. In the previous verse, the word nimittamatram indicates the Supreme Lord is completely aloof from the action and reaction of this material world. How is everything being done? The word inconceivable has been used. So there it is. Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. It is not within the power of one's small brain to comprehend. Unless one accepts the inconceivable power and energy of the Lord, one cannot make any progress. The forces which act are certainly set up by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but He is always aloof from their action and reaction. So I was thinking, oh, did the doctor do it on purpose? Who did it? What's happening? But actually it's Krishna. But He's aloof. So you can't blame Him. As you say, nadate kasachit papam, 515 Bhagavad Gita. So what is it? I have it here. Nachayava sukritam vibhu. He does not assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. So then the last paragraph of this purport, Srila Prabhupada says, how the Lord acts is nicely explained in Vishnu Purana. Fire is situated in one place, while the heat and light produced by the fire act in many different ways. Another example, the electric powerhouse is situated in one place, but by its energies, many different types of machinery move. The production is never identical with the original source of the energy, but the original source of energy, being the prime factor, is simultaneously one with and different from the product. There we go. Achintya Veda Veda Tattva is a perfect way of understanding. In this material world, the Lord incarnates in three forms, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, by which He takes charge of the three modes of material nature. So this is, but He's always apart. So where is this confirmed? That the Lord, I think there was a verse that somebody quoted in from 1st Canto, 2nd chapter, verse 23, isn't it? 23, 24, okay. That the Lord is, He incarnates, He accepts the forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, and therefore everything happens. There's another verse, 1:5:20, Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Ivetaro. In Bhagavad Gita, where is this confirmed? Simultaneously one and different. Maya Titam Idam Savam, that's the one Prabhupada always quotes. Jagat Avyakta Martina. And the verse from Vishnu Purana is Ekadesha Stitasya Agner Jotsna Vistarini Yatha Rasya Brahmana Shakti Stateram Akiram Jagat. So this is the verse that Prabhupada paraphrased here in this purport. So the conclusion, now he's describing that one, that is Vishnu Purana. Yeah. So from this verse, I think verse 17, is it? Time. No, from verse 18, time is going to be described as the cause, the Lord as time. And in verse 19, this cause of time is analyzed very minutely. So if we study this verse, we can understand all the different actions of time. And I've put on the board a picture of, these are all the Sanskrit words describing time in verse 19. My dear Juva, oh, I'm going to sing it actually. Sonantata karakalo natira rikit avya janam chanayana chanayam maryam tirantakam. My dear Juva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ever existing, but in the form of time. He is the killer of everything. He has no beginning, although he is the beginning of everything. Nor is he ever exhaustible, although everything is exhausted in due course of time. The living entities are created through the agency of the Father and killed through the agency of death. But he is perpetually free of birth and death. So although he's responsible for creation, destruction, he's not. He's free of it. He's not born and he does not die. So this, in the first paragraph of this purport, Srila Prabhupada actually analyzes the Sanskrit words one by one, and he explains them. So what I'm going to do is read to you the English, and I want you to give me the Sanskrit. So I'm going to do it part by part. And it's, you see how it actually follows. So I'll start from the beginning. Oh, not from the beginning. I'll start from the beginning. The supreme authority and inconceivable power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be minutely studied from this verse. So not this doesn't have Sanskrit. This is what Prabhupada, introduction. So now, the first thing that Prabhupada says, he is always unlimited. That means he has no creation or end. Unlimited. Huh? Ananta. Ananta. Then what does Prabhupada say next? He is, however, death in the form of time. It's described in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, I am death. I take away everything at the end of life. Antakala. Antakarakala. Yes. Then the next thing. He is, however, death. Eternal time is also without beginning. Anadi. See how Prabhupada is taking it one by one there. He's explaining each one. But it is the creator of all creatures. Adikrit. The example is given of touchstone, which creates many valuable stones and jewels, but does not decrease in power. Similarly, creation occurs many times. Everything is maintained, and after a time, everything is annihilated. But the original creator, the Supreme Lord, remains untouched and undiminished in power. Avyayam. Undiminished in power. Then next, the secondary creation is made by Brahma. Brahma is created by the Supreme Godhead. Janam, janena, janayan. Yes. One living entity is created from another. Lord Shiva annihilates the whole creation. But at the end, he is also annihilated by Vishnu. Lord Vishnu remains. In the Vedic hymns, it is stated, in the beginning, there is only Vishnu, and he alone remains at the end. So what's that one? Marayam Mrityunantakam. So just see how Prabhupada just took one word after the other in that purport and explained each Sanskrit word. It's very, very nice how Srila Prabhupada does it, analyze each Sanskrit word. So at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, year after year, many books are published for public reading regarding Hitler's killing thousands of Jews in confinement. But no one is researching who killed Hitler and who created such a gigantic killer of human beings. The devotees of the Lord are not much interested in the study of the flickering history of the world. They are interested only in him who is the original creator, maintainer, annihilator. That is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. So here again, moon and mission, just to understand Krishna. All this flickering history, so many wars, so many people killed, it's not very interesting for devotees. Now another thing about this verse, the Sanskrit, their exact same verse is given by Kapiladev, 3:29-35, exact same Sanskrit. And I'll sing it for you, see if it matches. Sonantanta karakalo nadir adikrit avya janam janena janayam marayam mitunantakam. Exact, right? Word for word. Exact Sanskrit given by Kapiladev last year. And the translation is a little bit different. So I'll read the translation from that verse. The eternal time factor has no beginning and no end. It is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the maker of the criminal world. It brings about the end of the phenomenal world. It carries on the work of creation by bringing one individual into existence from another. And likewise, it dissolves the universe by destroying even the Lord of Death, Yamaraj. So there it is, the same verse. Yes? What? 3:29-35, is that correct? No. It's 45. Okay? 3:29-45. That's a typing error, which I will correct. 3:29-45 by Kapiladev. So in that purport, Prabhupada gives something very nice about how this relates to devotees. This is a purport of 3:29-45. I'm not reading from this purport now. I'm just reading you something that will illuminate this verse from the perspective of a devotee of the Lord. Prabhupada says, no one can live within this material world eternally. The phenomenal world is created, maintained, and destroyed by the finger signal of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, a devotee does not desire anything in this material world. So just the destruction is like this. Creation, destruction, just the signal he gives. Or maybe he just glances. Maybe he doesn't even give the signal. Or the signal is with his glance. But the devotee, so for us, what we should learn from this experience is not to desire anything in this world. The devotee desires only to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This servitude exists eternally. The Lord exists eternally. His servitor exists eternally. And the service exists eternally. So Prabhupada is saying that time, the symbol of time, means everything is finished. But we don't have to, the devotee doesn't worry about that because we are eternal, the Lord is eternal, and our service is eternal. And nobody can take away our service because that's our nature. So we'll... Yeah, that's all I have. We'll stop here. Does anybody have questions or comments about this? Manu is trying to preach to Dhruva not to fight, not to kill. Stop your killing. And he's giving arguments from so many different angles of vision as who is the cause. Madan Gopal Prabhu. 13. Yes, that was our discussion yesterday. Is he a pure devotee? Yes, my devotees. I don't follow the purport though. Which purport are you in? 13? That sounds like 14. It's 12, okay. It's 12. Yeah, verse 12. So what's the question, or is that a comment? Yeah, well that was... Well, how if he's a pure devotee, how come he lost it, right? How come he got carried away by anger if he's a pure devotee? He's not allowed, is he? If you're a pure devotee, you're not allowed to get carried away. Yes? Yes, Mother Parvati is quite aware with... Lord Shiva, who else? Well, Lord Shiva had good reason. We learned about that, actually, because he's an incarnation of ignorance. What do you say, Bhagavad? Arjuna got bewildered. So Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Yudhisthira got bewildered, so Bhishma could speak. And Dhruva got bewildered, so Manu could speak. Right. Well, that's one line of thinking. It's quite possible. Yeah. Now we get beautiful arguments by Manu. Beautiful. And it had to come because there's no creation in the fourth canto, so therefore it should be somewhere. Sarga. Sarga should be there. One of the 10 topics of Bhagavatam. And now we have it. Yes. That's another reason, yeah. Yes. Even when a pure devotee loses it, everyone gets purified. And they went to Brahmaloka. Yeah, that's a good point. So that also is proof that he was a pure devotee. Nobody else could send them to Brahmaloka. If he wasn't a pure devotee, he couldn't do that. So here's a proof that he's a pure devotee. He sent them to Brahmaloka. Just by what Prabhupada said, there was one word Prabhupada used, indiscriminately killing them. Indiscriminate. He didn't look who he was killing. He just means like with anger. Yeah, sankirtan. Yeah, in the first stage he was sakam. Then he became nishkam. He became pure body. Then he had a relapse. And went back to... But this time it was by Krishna's desire, you're saying.
To me it seems one kind of definition is that when we see the direct reciprocation of healing of the God with the devotee.
That's true.
Yoga Maya or whatever, then it's the devotee.
Yes. So he says it's... So you're saying this is Krishna's arrangement because we see the direct intervention or reciprocation of the Lord here in this case.
That...
You're saying Krishna wanted him to go through that purification. Yes, the 36,000 years, and along with that came, and he knew, and he said, your brother is going to die. So of course, if the brother is going to die, then Dhruva is going to have to take some action. So all these things were arranged by the Lord. So that's also another way of looking at it, could be. Yes, Svanamali?
Normally devotees not get angry when he got...
Yeah, I didn't quite catch that.
Actually, the brother of Dhruva got killed. That's why he's angry. Actually, he's not personally get angry.
Okay, so he's angry because it's his duty, not that it's his own personal. It's not because somebody got angry with him. And so that's also, I mean, it was in the line of duty. He was angry because he was a kshatriya, it was his duty to kill if there was something wrong. Anand Vrindavan. He's to be considered saintly. Okay, so apichet suracharo bachitemam ananyabhak. That can be applied in this case of Dhruva Maharaj. Prashanta. Narada Muni had the darshan. Okay. So she's proposing that perhaps Dhruva needed further purification, as in the case of Narada Muni. He had the darshan, but he wasn't quite yet ready to see the Lord all the time. But actually Dhruva did see the Lord. Narada just got a glimpse in the heart. In the heart it was. But Dhruva was seeing, he was seeing in his heart quite for... fixed. And then he saw him outside. I don't know if we can compare that to Narada Muni. Yes. One who surrenders to the Lord. That's the primary of the 26 qualities. Yes. Swarup Lakshanam. Swarup Lakshanam. Okay, so if he's surrendered to the Lord, that makes him pure. Doesn't necessarily mean he has all the other 25. So this is maybe the case with Dhruva. He's surrendered. So he has the main characteristic of a pure devotee, but he may not have all the others. You agree?
It's a special case.
Special case. Yeah, he is a special case, yes. Very special.
He started as a child, so you know that special... had sneha towards him.
He started as a child.
He has a special
so he has a special affection from the Lord. Yes.
In a previous chapter, chapter 9, mm-hmm.
Yes, he had special affection for him. Bhagavad. Beginning of this chapter? Narayana Astra, yeah, where did he get that from?
His brother,
yes.
And it seems like
He didn't even shoot it. He didn't shoot it, he just put it on his bow. Her point is that it seems like the Astra was beyond him. All he had to do is put it on his bow, he didn't even have to shoot it. And everything was happening, all the arrows were coming out. And
that's how all that feeling was going.
Right. Okay, she's saying, well, he took the responsibility, but actually it seemed to be it was Lord Narayan. It was a Narayan Astra, after all, that did all the killing. Yeah, and actually, I think Kuvera will bring up this point in chapter 12. You didn't kill the Yakshas. Manu won't say that, because Manu wants him to take the responsibility. But then when Dhruva comes before Kuvera, Kuvera will say the opposite thing. Actually, it wasn't you that killed the Yakshas. So it's quite... We'll see the differences here. Yeah.
That brings us back to the discussion about the doership.
Yeah, who is the doer? Who is the doer?
Three doers.
So let's say who the three doers are first. That's material nature, and no, not time. The jiva, and the Lord. The Lord, the jiva, and material nature, right? Prakriti?
Jiva desires.
Yes, exactly. And otherwise, if the individual didn't have anything to do with it, there would be no need for Manu to stop him. It's just Krishna. Why not just let them all die? Why? What is the need of stopping Dhruva Maharaj? But why did he stop him? This is the point. Why did he stop Dhruva?
I think it's a test on how he surrendered to the Lord.
You think it's a test on how he surrendered to the Lord? He stopped him to save him from sin. So the point was that Dhruva was acting in such a way that he himself was taking responsibility for the killing. He was going out of the law. He was going beyond the limits of Scripture.
Also out of the surrendering to the Lord.
Yeah. He was going beyond. So this is the point. When you go beyond the law, then you take responsibility for sin. And therefore, he was going to get reaction for this because it was not satisfying, it was not pleasing to the Lord. It was not the Lord's plan, in other words, for him to kill all these yakshas like this.
But only at some stage, it seems. Initially, it was all right.
Yeah, initially.
But then
when it got out of hand, then the Lord came, and then this is not the Lord's. He's saying, this is not the Lord's plan.
But then yes. It's
yeah, that was when he was being overcome.
But, yeah.
The sages blessed him. But he was completely bewildered. He didn't know what to do, and he was overcome by the mystic yoga. So then they said, "No, you." So at all stages, it seems that he was being helped. He was not alone. He was fighting at a certain point. Then the sages came and said, "No, don't worry." And then he continued fighting. Then at a certain point, they stopped him. Yes, Lidishuka. Okay, so he's saying that it seems to him that if you have the 26 qualities of a devotee, that means you're a pure devotee and you can go back to Godhead. But now it looks like Dhruva is lacking some of these qualities.
Externally.
And internally, perhaps, too. Yeah, Madangopa. Yeah, I think actually this is discussed in some book somewhere. Like it's just, I can't remember where now. Anyway. By having the primary quality, automatically you will acquire all the other 25. Adi Purusha. They're a pure, yes. Okay. There's different kinds of pure devotees. In other words, yes, it's a very broad term. Very broad term. So, yeah, well, Lila Shukas, that is a very vast category. Very vast category. So, yeah, whether or not, it would appear that he is, that Krishna is saying he is a pure devotee. But he did become momentarily he became bewildered. And even we brought up the example of Arjuna when his son died. He became bewildered. He lamented. He was going to throw himself in the fire. So these things happen to devotees. Draupadi becomes angry. Bhima becomes angry. Bhima is a pure devotee, but if you study his life, you'll be very surprised. Okay, Vanamali? So Krishna corrects the devotees, or Krishna sends someone to correct the devotees if they're going off. Okay, next and next. Okay, this is a good point. Here she's bringing up a good point. May I answer your question? The difference between Krishna and the jiva. Yes. Yes. Bewildered. Takes him back. And this is, there's a verse in Gita where Krishna says this. Ananyas? Not exactly what she's saying, that the devotee sometimes forgets, but the Lord doesn't. Yes, he said that. Okay? But if you look in chapter 4, there's Arjuna said, how is it you are superior to the sun god? The sun god is superior to you. You are superior to the sun god. The sun god has, his birth is superior to yours. So how is it that you remember all these things? Now your birth seems to be after. So how is it that you spoke to the sun god? And then Krishna says, many births, both you and I have passed, and I remember all, but you have forgotten. So Arjuna was certainly a pure devotee. But how could he forget all of his births? Because he's a jiva. And Krishna is Bhagavan. So therefore, Arjuna forgets, Krishna remembers. That's a good point. Yeah. It's a question of one quality. Madan Gopal says, all you need is one. Srirup Lakshana. Yes?
That's what the verse says.
Apichet Suracharo. Right. So this is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. This is confirmed by the life of Dhruva. Okay, wait a minute. Haribo. Okay, Madan Gopal, raise your hands. Madan Gopal? Okay, verse 12, purport. We can get a definition of a pure devotee. The Lord's thinking of him, and the devotee's thinking of the Lord, and the Lord's thinking of the devotees, always. Yes, that was a good point. And he's small. He's prone to forget. He's prone to lose it. So even on this high level of pure devotion that Dhruva Maharaj had, still he was prone to anger. He was prone to fall from his position of pure devotion. But the Lord came very quickly to protect him from that. There is that verse. What is it? Konteya prate janihi na me bhakta pranashati. It protects from fall down. Yeah, okay, Marvin Puri? Same point. Ananya Shinte Antama. Okay, he's going to provide him what he needs to go back to Godhead. According to Ananya Shinte Antama. He may be lacking something, but it will be provided. And if you start going off on the wrong track, then Krishna comes and brings you back. So that's the protection of the Lord. Yes. Okay, proof that he's a pure devotee is that Manu came to intervene. When he went off. When he went off. So, definition is? It's Krishna reciprocates. Okay, so you agree with this purport of verse 12 that this is a description, definition of a pure devotee. Jiva Maharaj was a pure devotee and was accustomed to always thinking of the Lord. Reciprocally, the Lord always thinks of those pure devotees who think of Him only 24 hours a day. So Prabhupada says he's a pure devotee, and this is why he's a pure devotee, because it's what's on his mind. The Lord is on his mind, the Lord is in his heart, so therefore he's a pure devotee. That's what he's thinking of. And because the Lord's thinking of him, then therefore he protects him from going off. So in this case, Manu is also an incarnation of the Lord. Manu is Manvantara. Manvantara is Manu. So it's actually, he is actually representative of the Lord, and the Lord has come in the form of Manu to protect Dhruva Maharaj. Not to protect the Yakshas, but actually to protect Dhruva. So here we're seeing the benefit of being a pure devotee of the Lord. So we should all desire it, to be like Dhruva. Always think of Krishna. That's Krishna's first instruction in Bhagavad Gita. Always think of me. Come, my devotee. Also in chapter 12, that's the, just, I forget that, Adyasta, I can't remember it. You know, 8th verse in chapter 12. I can't remember it anyway. But he says, just think of me. That's the first thing, best thing to do. And if you can't do that, then do the sadhana bhakti. Okay, any other questions? Yes. Are you satisfied? No. Okay. Lila Shuka is not 100% convinced. Oh. Okay, so we're getting this angle of vision now. Yes, when Vraja Bihari is here, he also gives us that angle of vision. Okay. So your question is, so we're hearing how Dhruva is a pure devotee. Does this apply to us? Our ISKCON gurus? To, that's your question, right? That's a very good question. Insignificant. He says, we are insignificant compared to Dhruva. Insignificant compared to Dhruva. For? You got it? Poverty. Lord Chaitanya says everyone, and Srila Prabhupada said hundreds of times, everyone should become guru. So that means everyone should behave in that way. And one should be, you should make yourself qualified. Yeah, it's not meant that we simply sit in our room and chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead and don't care into hell with the rest of the world. Right? No. 4? 872.
Always, that in comparison to Dhruva Maharaj, we are insignificant. We cannot do anything like what Dhruva Maharaj did for self-realization, because we are absolutely incompetent.
Okay.
And then Prabhupada goes on to describe that even until this time we have been given special concession, worship and meditation.
Yeah.
It's a different paradigm altogether.
So it's quite different. You can't apply this what we're hearing here about Dhruva to the modern day ISKCON gurus, is what you're saying.
Well, it's
what Prabhupada is saying. Okay, so in the matter of self-realization, nobody can compare to Dhruva Maharaj. But in the matter of pushing on the movement of Srila Prabhupada, you know, then what is the... Yes. Okay. Okay, so although we are insignificant, we can still take the determination of Dhruva Maharaj. And if we take that determination, then even in the matter of self-realization, I think Prabhupada says we can go back in one life.
We should have the
determination.
And
we should have it.
Yes.
So even though we are insignificant, if we have his determination, we can also have the same result that he had, which is to go back to Godhead at the end of life. Yes. Okay. So then the thing that we have that Dhruva didn't have is the special conception of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So if our gurus have got the special mercy of Lord Chaitanya and they're taking advantage of that mercy, then it's quite possible that they can be a guru. Isn't it? So they should all go to the Panchatattva in Mayapur, or somehow or other. If they can't go to Mayapur, then chant Panchatattva Mahamantra and pray for the mercy. Yeah? Yes. Okay, so if you're thinking about initiation, then you should check the guru to see if he's got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada says 1 year you should check the guru. They should check each other for 1 year. Serving, and the guru should check the disciple should check the guru for 1 year, and then see if he's got the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, as if you can tell. But anyway, you should try to see. Anyway, these are the qualifications in this age.
Oh.
Any food? Anybody have any food? Prasadam for the monkey who took her glasses. From your head. A stick. Is Nandala? Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Go to the Goshala maybe. Do Madhukari. Madhukari. Oh, wait. Manigopal has some prasad. Well, it's a good name, Gopal. Gopal always has a laddu in his hand, right? Anyway, you can go out there if you want to direct the proceedings. Thank you. So, the question is, will the monkey go back to Godhead at the end of this by eating prasad? Actually, he will, because Prabhupada said all the monkeys in Vrindavan are devotees who made offenses in Vrindavan. There was a dead monkey on the path today. Outside Preetu's ashram. Happy dead monkey. Somebody said it was... Yeah, she told me she was happy. The monkey was happy. The dead monkey. She went back to Godhead. So... Yeah, that was Marayam. That because it must have been in the purport. Marayam, even Shiva, who annihilates everyone, who annihilates the universe, he is also destroyed. That's here in the purport. Lord Shiva annihilates the whole creation, but at the end he is also annihilated by Vishnu. So that's Marayam Mitunantakam. Death himself is killed by death. So Shiva symbolizes destruction. Yeah, Yamaraj. In the other verse, it was translated as Yamaraj. When Kapiladev spoke this verse, then Prabhupada translated this person as Yamaraj. But here in this case, he translated as Shiva. Shiva is above even Yamaraj, because Yamaraj is killed by Shiva. But then Prabhupada makes the point that Shiva is killed by Vishnu at the end. So this is... Shiva is actually an incarnation of time. Shiva is time, Kala. But he is killed by Vishnu. So, yes, it is said in Brahma Samhita that Shiva is Kala. Shiva is the incarnation of time. So that's why he's there. He is time, but he is also killed by Vishnu, who is higher than time. Success? Oh, very good. You got your glasses back. Oh, okay. Well, that was kind of him. Okay, you can give it back to Madan Gopal.
They were offering him papaya, but he wants the maha.
Oh, they're very picky. The monkey wanted maha. He didn't want papaya. That's pretty good. I guess the price is going up now for glasses these days. Yes, glasses. You have to give maha prasad if you want your glasses back. So watch out. Yeah. No, they come to my house. And they take from my table, yeah. Yeah. They come to my house and, yeah, they take, if the door is open, they walk in, they take, if they don't find food, they take glasses.
That kind of shows they were some
kind of pundits in their. Okay. Sankirtan proposes that the ones who take glasses were pundits in their last life. So therefore, they have that attraction for glasses. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. We'll see you tomorrow. Hare Krishna.